Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go. Come with me. There's a world out there that we should see. Take my hand. Close your eyes. With you right here, I'm a rocketeer. Let's your name on it, above the clouds in the atmosphere, just say the words and we out of here, hold my hand if you're feeling scared, we're flying up, up, out of here.
I'm Tim Bespain. I'm out of SpeedwayDigest.com. We'll ride out of Richmond Raceway. The way the crow flies here. I'm approximately 8 miles south of this 2.66-mile monster we call Talladega Super Speed. Stephen, how you doing this evening, brother? I hope, hope you got a little bit better. You've been sick the past couple of weeks, bro.
Yeah, I'm doing a whole lot better this week than I have the last couple of weeks. I can actually talk. And I don't have to suck wind in between every sentence. And I actually have a halfway decent voice back now.
That's awesome, brother. And again, I want to thank you, even with sick, you were Johnny on the spot, calling in, taking care of you. Thank you for that. Let our listeners know the number to call in is 383-3681. And we got a last guest coming on tonight. Steve has Bruce Taylor, Relations Director at Martinsville Speedway, is going to join us at 20 after the hour. But talk about his big deal coming up there at Martinsville this weekend. We're finally going to a short track, Stephen. I can't wait to see how everything pans out up there at Martinsville. Martinsville is what they call the paperclip, the half mile of mayhem. It's going to be a nice watch.
Martinsville has always been a nice little track to go to, and we've seen confrontation in the past there. We've seen Matt Kenseth and Joey Logano go after it. We've seen Denny Hamlin go after it. Chase Elliott go after it a couple of years ago. I mean, it's just short track racing. And it's been something that's been on the schedule ever since the beginning. We've seen rivalries begin and end at places like that. And I'm glad that we continue to go to places like Martinsville. This is also the first opportunity of the year for some of these drivers that feel like in the first couple of races that somebody did something to them that, you know, they can get that little bit of payback onto them. I say that all the time, every time we come to Martinsville. But it's a good place for somebody that, you know, again, feel like they've been wronged. Maybe Daniel Suarez and Michael McDowell will go at it on the racetrack. You don't ever know what's going to happen. But I like we still continue to come to Martinsville Speedway. This weekend is going to be fun, as it always is.
I definitely agree, Steve. I think I sort of fixed a little communication problem. I'm still breaking up, but one of the real awesome things about Martinsville is Martinsville hot dog, brother.
Yeah, and they've gone back to the Jesse Jones hot dogs too. So they had Smithfield there for about 2 or 3 years there, and they finally went back to the Jesse Jones Little Red Gut Grenades that, you know, they had there for more than 50 years. And, it's unique in its own right. It turns the water like neon, some color or another when you're cooking the thing down. But it's one of those things that you just can't eat one of them. And, in fact, you just got to go get a whole bag full.
And you actually did that one year too, bro. That was really neat. That was really neat.
I do that every time I go there because, you know, I'm going to eat at least 4, 5, or 6 of them, so I might as well just go get a whole bag full.
Like I said, let's go ahead and talk about qualifying at Fontana Speedway. We had what you call one big bumper jam, or whatever you want to call it. Everybody waiting with this new package out there at Fontana. Everybody was lining up. Nobody wanted to be the first one to go out. And can you let us know a little bit about probably the reason that they didn't want to run single cars, 2 or 3 cars? They wanted to go out in a group qualifying because the draft means a lot now with the package we have.
Yeah, so at these big racetracks, like these 2 mile racetracks in places like, you know, when we come back to Daytona or Talladega, Michigan, places like that, these places are so error dependent. The draft is something that it's a necessary evil, and it's becoming even more so at these tracks like Michigan or Auto Club this weekend. So the only way that you're going to go out there and you're going to get any type of speed out of these cars, you've got to go out there and run as a pack. And speeds were down anyways. These cars were only running about 170 miles an hour around there, 171, 172, 3, something like that. We've seen them sail off into these corners at 215, 218 miles an hour at places like California. So, you know, they were about nearly 40 miles an hour off the pace of what we've seen in the past, but just because of the way that these cars are so aero-dependent and the way that they put these those big blades into the wind to produce more downforce on the back as well as the front downforce with those aeroducts into these cars, along with the cut horsepower, like 550 horsepower from, 750, 800 horsepower, you know, it really bogs these cars down. So, again, it's just that's a necessary evil that comes along now, that not only do you have to draft during the race, but you now have to draft during qualifying. But as NASCAR said, these drivers made a mockery out of it, and I have to agree. But then again, I think these drivers have kind of been making a mockery out of it for quite some time. A couple of years ago, when it first started doing these group qualifying, I literally stood at the end of pit road at Richmond and watched 20, 25 cars literally just sit there at the end of pit road until there's about a minute left, maybe 45 seconds left on the clock. And then they all rolled off at the exact same time, listened to the radios on, so you could hear spotters saying, okay, there's 2 minutes left, there's a minute and a half left, whatever, a minute and 15 seconds left. Count them down because, you know, all these drivers, you know, I think they've been playing games with this group qualifying for quite some time. And while it was designed to add some excitement into qualifying and instead of seeing single car runs out there, these drivers, like everything else, the teams and the drivers have figured out how to game the system. And NASCAR came out there and they answered the media's questions on what was going on and why they thought it was going on. But, you know, I'll use their terminology into this and said that the drivers made a mockery of it all. Going forward, by the time we get to Texas, we're going to have some new qualifying procedures, maybe some changes is what they're saying. Not this weekend at Martinsville, but honestly, I'd like to see them go back to single qualifying, one warm-up lap, one hot lap, single round qualifying, put all the cars out there, line them up 1 to 40 based on time, one lap, just be done with it. We saw it even at Daytona where they ran single qualifying, with Paul and Alpha Paul qualifying. They were able to get that done in just a little over an hour, right about an hour or so, and I think that's condensed down enough that if we can, keep qualifying about an hour, you know, with single car runs, I don't think the only way to do it is go to a single car qualifying one round, put everything you got into it, just like at the short tracks. Maybe at a place like Daytona or Talladega, you might need three laps or two laps or something like that, but for a grand majority of the racetracks, I think you go for single lap, warm-up lap, hit the line, and then your hot lap and go back to the pits. And, you know, I think we can get it done in about an hour. That's just my suggestion. I think, I don't know if NASCAR is going to look at doing that in the near future, but if I had to say, I think I would like to see that happen, and I think that we just do away with the rounds because I think it games the system just a little too much. I think it one round, one lap makes the drivers put everything into it they have in one lap.
That's right, Stephen. And excuse me. I hope I fixed my little scratching problem there. But there it comes again. Anyway, Senior Vice President of Competition Scott Miller spoke with some of the media after the qualifying deal there at Auto Club Cleveland. Let's listen to a little bit about what Scott Miller had to say.
Give us your opinion. Yeah.
Well, I saw obviously what our fans don't want. Obviously, having the last 12 cars wait until they couldn't get a time posted on the board and kind of making a mockery out of the qualifying is not what we expect for our fans. And a little bit on us, and that we hoped things would go better than that. It's an exciting show when they're out there on the racetrack, but obviously we have a little work to do on our part to get a little bit better format so things like that can happen. We certainly want to provide our fans with what they deserve, and we and the teams didn't do a very good job of that today, so we're really disappointed.
That's pretty much going to be the end of
I think we will definitely make some tweaks to it. Not quite sure what. I mean, we've been working on a few kind of other things, but we really don't want to go back to single car qualifying. There may not be another way, but we want to try to exhaust every possibility before we do that, because that's just, it's not as fun, not as intriguing of a show as kind of the group situation. So we're going to try to figure out a way to adjust the group qualifying thing and not go back to single, but, you know, we got some work to do on that.
Any timeline on potential changes?
Huh?
Any timeline on potential changes?
Well, I mean, we won't see this sort of situation out of Martinsville, so I would say that by Texas we're going to have to, you know, because it'll be a little bit the same scenario with, you know, wanting to go out there and run together and draft. So I would say that by Texas we will have something different in the queue.
All right, thank you, guys.
And just as you spoke, Stephen, there, Scott Miller said the same thing you did. Going to Texas, there's probably going to be some tweaking in the qualifying. Scott Miller, their senior vice president of competition there for NASCAR, mentioned that he did not want to go back to single car qualifying, and that was sort of contradictory to what you want. You would like to go back to single car qualifying. But Stephen, is this just the apple that we have built? And you and I know the driver's crew chiefs, our good friend Lambert Reynolds, they're going to push the envelope to the extent. And is this just the animal that we have built in the sport nowadays trying to make competition better? I mean, I just want to throw it out there.
Well, you know, I think it goes back to, you know, every action has an equal and opposite reaction to it. And I think that's true within the sport, that for everything that they're that NASCAR may change, there's a reaction or, you know, an equal reaction to that. As we continue to try and get the competition closer and closer together, as we try and make tweaks to bring fans on board, give them an intriguing show and a reason to tune in on TV or radio or even through social media. Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a reaction. It's a reaction to it. You know, again, for every rule that NASCAR implements, there's an engineer working somewhere to figure out what the gray areas of that rule is that they can bite around the rule without breaking it. So, you know, again, you know, in qualifying, these drivers, they've figured it out and they've become masters at it at this point. This is the first time that no cars took time, and the pole sitter had a zero time. And, you know, this happened in 2015 at Kentucky, I believe, in the truck series. We had the same scenario out there where trucks didn't take time, and Paul Sutter sat on the pole with both, you know, big old zeros up there. So, you know, we don't want this to become the norm. We don't want, you know, like they said, the fans don't want to see these drivers on pit road and not take time. But, you know, again, they've got to make the changes, and, you know, as they make the changes, drivers and teams are going to react to those changes. And, you know, it may not be at the beginning, but, you know, I would figure at some point down the line, once they get a little bit used to these changes, then, you know, we may see these drivers do something totally different. And you know, I don't really have any inside knowledge on exactly what they're going to make the changes or how they're going to make the changes. But, you know, yet again, you know, for every change, there's a reaction to that change. So, you know, drivers will go out there and do what they have to do, you know, make their teams, sponsors happy. And sometimes, you know, we have situations like we did at California this past weekend, but at least we've seen NASCAR reacting to that and willing to make the changes needed so that it doesn't happen again.
I definitely agree, Stephen. And I know you're not a big fan of road course. I'm still getting some feedback. I apologize for that, but I don't know what to do. I'm unplugged and plugged and everything. Anyway, like I said, Stephen, I know you're not a big fan of road courses. But on the road course, NASCAR is out like groups. They send out five. I don't know because I don't watch that many road courses. Five cars, 10 cars at a time as far as group qualifying. And when they send them out, they have to go. Is that an option maybe Scott Miller and NASCAR might need to look at it for dwindling it down, but actually not doing a single car qualifying, but sending them out in small groups and tell them whatever your group comes up, you got to go?
Yeah, I think that could be a potential option to it as long as they're not sitting there trying to make them heat races, because I don't think heat races are going to fix the situation at all. We saw the heat races in the Xfinity Series wasn't as exciting as what we've seen or what NASCAR had hoped, and, you know, everybody had hoped as far as that was concerned. But I do think that, you know, that could be a potential in qualifying where, You just take, you know, if there's 40 cars that show up, you put them in packs of 5 or 10 or whatever the number is you want to come up with. You're not on the grid within, you know, 2 minutes or 3 minutes of that qualifying time, then you can just sit yourself in the garage and, you know, and if you don't roll off and the rest of them roll off, then I guess you can go sit in the garage too, and then you can start back the field. I think there's ways that NASCAR can do it. I think that's an option. I think it's a viable option into this at some of these racetracks. I don't know if necessarily you could do it at a place in Martinsville, because Martinsville is kind of small, but then again, you might be able to. They're going to roll a lot of cars off this weekend. So, I don't see any reason why that you wouldn't be able to try something like that. I mean, it would force drivers to get off a pit road, and, you know, there's a penalty for not doing so, and that penalty is starting at the back and go sit in the garage for the rest of the weekend, lose some practice time, and then go sit then start at the rear of the field on Sunday afternoon. So, yeah, I think that's an incentive to make them go out there and do something.
That sounds good, Steve. And Steve, we got our guest. We'll go ahead and bring up Public Relations Director of Martinsville Speedway, Mr. Brooks Taylor, into the pit stop. Tim Despain and Stephen Wilson.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event. Let's get ready to rumble!
Brooks Taylor, Public Relations Director, Marvel Speedway. How are you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm great. That's quite the introduction. I hope I can live up to it.
Well, I know you can, because whenever we had Mike Smith on, Mike always loved that introduction.
Well, you know, Mike's a good fellow. He actually texted me earlier this week, wishing us good luck and good weather, and I think we're definitely getting the good weather, so we'll certainly take it.
That's right. And Brooks, again, thank you for calling in tonight. Such short notice. And I'm having a little bit of technical difficulty on my side here in Talladega. So I'm going to hand you over to Stephen Wilson, which is right outside of Richmond up there, and let him ask you a few questions. And if I can get this fixed, I'm about to have a couple of questions. But thanks again for coming on, Brooks. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
Brooks, thanks. I appreciate taking time to come on here tonight. And again, sorry about this lateness of the note to get you on tonight. The first question I got for you is, Martinsville Speedway has been on circuit and since 1949, been in operation since 1947. What makes Martinsville so special that people should come there and watch a race?
Well, I think when you think of Martinsville, obviously the first thing that comes to your mind, just like you were saying, is the history of the place. Going back to 1947, 2 years before NASCAR's original schedule, and the only track remaining from NASCAR's original schedule that's still racing its cup level today. So I think the first thing you think of is the history. It's like going to Fenway Park or Wrigley Field or Lambeau Field or something. And and I think the second thing you think of is the value. Clay Earls, when he founded the track 70-plus years ago, he said, when a man plunks down his hard-earned dollar, he better get more than a dollar in return. And that's something that we've tried to hold true to this day. And I think if you look at our ticket prices and the experiences that we have for fans, that are most of which are free or a nominal add-on fee, we've tried to do just that. And then obviously the racing speaks for itself. You know, if you go back to the first race, September 7th, 1947, Buck Baker led the first 48 laps and Red Byron passed him with two to go. And we've had close finishes ever since. So I think people, you know, I think those three factors are the biggest reasons that people have come to Martinsville.
Martinsville Speedway is attractive. We've seen rivalries both start and end at. We've seen the Kenseth and Logano, the Elliotts and Hamlin and others develop at tracks like that. It's just good old short track racing out there. You know, as we begin our short track season with Martinsville and Bristol and Richmond going to finish it up here in the spring, you guys get a little bit of the first taste of this. Sometimes it's, you know, one of those places where drivers get an opportunity to, you know, get back at somebody they feel has wronged them during the first couple of races of the year. How do you think that plays into, you know, what the sport is today and how what NASCAR fans are yearning for when they come to the racetrack?
Well, I think, you know, the one thing that fans of all sports want is action. And you're certainly going to get that at Martinsville. And whether it's somebody that's looking for an opportunity for something that's happened 3 weeks ago or three laps ago, Martinsville is a place where they can bend some fenders and ruffle some feathers, and guys aren't scared to do it. And I think the close quarters racing at the track leads to that. And I think it's just one of those things where it's kind of the perfect storm: the long straightaways, the tight flat turns. You don't get a lot of speed, and so the drivers know that while it's not safe, it's not sending somebody in the wall at 185 miles an hour either. And you can ruin a day without ruining a life. So I think that's sort of what leads to all that, and we certainly embrace it.
A couple of years ago, Barnesville Speedway went on through a renovation there. You kept kind of a retro theme there. You know, we've seen at other tracks, you know, they try and build up the fan experience both inside and outside of the track on race day. What are some of the things that you guys are doing today that you have done in the past or something today that you've changed the way that you interact with fans both on race day and throughout the week?
Well, I think if you look at the things we've done to help build the fan experience, and like I said before, without hurting the wallet too much, on Friday is free to everyone. You can come in and watch the Truck Series practice for free. We've got an autograph session with the Truck Series drivers, and then that's followed by the hauler parade. And a lot of people come out, and they line up and down 220 to watch the haulers come rolling in. That's a pretty neat deal. And then on Saturday, it's youth 17 and under are free for the Truck Series race and cup practice and cup qualifying. And then we've got Fan Fest after that, where you get to see guys like Jimmy Johnson and Clint Boyer kind of let their hair down a little bit. We've got Bubba Wallace in that, Paul Menard, and excuse me, they'll be playing fun and games, and there'll be prizes, and that's all free to the fans. And then on Sunday, we've got the free race experience, which is a $30 add-on to the ticket, and you'll see a lot of drivers doing Q&As. It's all on the track. You can be down on the track for driver introductions. And then if you look at some of the things we've done around the facility, one thing we've always been careful of is not violating the integrity of the history of Martinsville. But we've done things like we've added the sky deck above turns 1 and 2, which is a sort of a VIP outdoor suite experience for the fans. And the fans are able to go up there, and there's a buffet throughout the day. You know, so if they want to purchase that experience, they can. Our tickets start at $47, and I don't think we have a ticket above $100. So trying to keep the cost low are some of the things that we've done. And then, of course, it's the only place you can get the famous Martinsville Speedway hot dogs. So if that doesn't get you out, I don't know what will.
Well, that was going to be my last question to you, is tell everybody about this famous Martinsville hot dog. If you haven't had one, what makes it so special? And yes, everybody knows it's $2, but what makes it so special that you have to come there and you just can't eat one?
Well, it's a red hot dog, Jesse Jones hot dog on a steamed bun with chili, mustard, onions, and slaw. And it's sort of just how people eat hot dogs in Martinsville and Henry County. And it's something that we've had since the beginning. And, you know, a lot of times sports venues as a whole will try to promote a certain concession item. The hot dog is something that really took a life of its own. It's something that's just been around since 1947, and it's just a piece of Martinsville. You come to the racetrack, and if it's your first time, you don't have to like it, but you have to try it, I feel. I feel like you can't come and say, you know, I didn't have one all the way, or I didn't try one all the way. So it's just something that is really taken a life of its own, and on a typical race weekend, we'll sell somewhere in the neighborhood of 65,000 hot dogs.
That's pretty good. Well, Brooks, I appreciate you taking the time to come on here tonight. I don't know if Tim has gotten his audio issues fixed up, but if he's got a question or two, if not, I can get you out of here and I'm gonna let him figure out if he got his audio issues figured out real quick. Tim, you got us?
Yes, sir. I'm back. I don't know if I got the audio figured out or not. Am I breaking up real bad?
Sounds good to me.
Okay, all right. Thanks, Brooke. Thanks, Steve. And just to touch on, that was going to be one of my questions, the Martinsville hot dog. Suzanne and I, we made the trek up to Martinsville. I don't remember how many years ago it was when we first started getting into this media stuff. We met Steve and his wife, A.M., up there, and, you know, that was back when Mike Smith was PR guy there. And I want to tell this story on Steven, if you don't mind. Steven said, I'm going to run down and get us some Martinsville hot dog. We was in the press box. I said, yes, Steven, go ahead and bring me one back. Well, Steven didn't only bring one. He brought a whole bag back, Brooks. It was probably 15 or 20 Martinsville hot dogs. And my question to you is, there's no other place. I mean, you know, y'all took the Martinsville hot dog down to Daytona, which I was not fortunate enough to make it down there. Steven made the trek down there in the media center. But there's nothing like a Martinsville hot dog at Martinsville. I mean, it's still a Martinsville hot dog when you take it away from Martinsville, but there's something about it, Brooks. Is it just the weather at Martinsville?
I think it's one of those things that knowing that you've had it at the track is what really makes it special. Like you said, it's special everywhere, but it's more special here. And I think it's just woven into the fabric, you know, as much as the ask of Martinsville Speedway. And it's something that, it's sort of like, so a few years back, my sister and I we went backpacking through Ireland. And there was something about having a Guinness beer at the Guinness brewery that it was just better. And I think it's something similar. You know, it's you're getting the authentic Martinsville Speedway hot dog at Martinsville Speedway. And it's just it's the place to get it. And we'll have them ready for everybody.
That sounds good, brother. And I want to commend you guys on, like y'all said, the racetrack has been there since back in the 1940s. It's one of the oldest racetracks still in commission that it runs a sanctioned race. And I want to commend y'all on leaving the track like it is. When I come up there back a few years ago, it was just like walking back in time. And to let our listeners know, Brooks, it's just there's something about Martinsville, which I know you guys added the lights and everything. In the near future, is it possible we could see maybe a truck race, Xfinity race, or a cup race at night at Martinsville Speedway?
You know, that's the question. That's probably the biggest question we used to always get was, where are you going to put in lights? Well, we did that. Now the next question is, when are you going to have a night race? And I can tell you the answer to that is we are fighting for that weekly, if not daily. Clay Campbell, track president, is on, in constant conversation with NASCAR and letting them know our thoughts and view on it. And it's not as simple as just saying, all right, we're going to run the STP 500 at night. Where our dates are right now, while we're looking at, 65, 70 degrees on Sunday, Saturday night, it's still going to get chilly. So we got to get a better date, and that's something that we're fighting for. It's not as simple as just calling Richmond or Kansas or Bristol or somebody and saying, hey, swap dates with us. There's a lot of moving parts, and we're fighting for it, and we hope it happens in the near future. We're ready for it when it does. And I know the fans are certainly ready for it as well.
That's right, and us media people are too. But my opinion, Tim Despain's opinion, I only hear from Talladega, Alabama, is don't touch the track. It's like walking back in time. We love it. It's just like going to Darlington Speedway. It's like going back in time. We love it like this. But, Brooks, thanks again for calling in, and we want to let you thank any of your sponsors for the racetrack. Anything you want to throw out there for the fans or anything y'all got going on, ticket prices or anything, you got the floor, bro.
Absolutely. I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on. We obviously couldn't do this without the fans. we're passionate about what we do, but if we didn't have anybody to do it for, it would be hard to do. So obviously the fans are the ones that we value the most, along with folks like STP and First Data. But we encourage everybody to come out this weekend. We feel like we have the most competitive prices, not only in NASCAR, but in top level professional sports across the board. Tickets start at $47. We've got them on sale, 877 race ticks or martinsvillespeedway.com, and somebody will be more than happy to help you with that that order and make sure you get the right seats. And it's going to be a great weekend, great race, and great weather. That's the biggest thing that we're trying to get out there. The forecast is really in our favor this year, and we're really looking forward to just a great weekend at Martinsville Speedway, and hoping to see you guys out soon. We're welcome anytime.
Brooks, thank you. We are sanctioned by the hard card holders, so I'm gonna get with my smarter one of the bunch here, Steve Lynn, SpeedwayDigest.com. We'll probably send you an email. We're probably gonna come up this fall, brother, if that's okay, and make our check up there.
Well, we're looking forward to it. Steven's sending everybody else that's writing for Speedway Digest, so he needs to hop on board and come on down too. It's not a long trek for him coming from just outside of Richmond. But when you guys come, we'll look forward to it. We'll have plenty of those hot dogs waiting for you.
All right. Thank you very much, Brooks, and good luck this weekend with STP 500 weekend there at Martinsville Speedway. We appreciate you calling in, brother. Don't be a stranger.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I'll come on anytime.
Thanks, Brooks. We'll see you, brother. Brooks Taylor there, Stephen, PR, public relations director there at Martinsville Speedway. He took over after Mike Smith. And just, I hate to bring up Mike Smith all the time, but Mike Smith is a character. And some of the stories that I want to tell, I could probably not tell. But anyway, I want to thank Brooks for coming on. And Stephen, we got a Brooks said he's going to take care of us. We need to book at Suzanne, if you're listening. We need to book at up there to Martinsville Speedway this fall. I mean, you know, we're going through a lot of races here, so we're going to try to keep our listeners and fans up to date with what all's going on. And I think a little crackling thing just come back. But Stephen, your take on there, just like what Brooks said. He said, you know, and I kept telling him, and I hate to keep saying it, but don't change the track. It's like walking back in time. They've been there since 1940-something. They're the oldest track on the section by the circuit as of this time, other than Darlington Raceway. And we go to Darlington Raceway every weekend. Kerry Tharp and his bunch up there, they put on a great show. Talked about the Marlboro Hot Dogs. You talked about the Marlboro Hot Dogs. But Stephen, he did, at any rate, they are working hard to get a truck, Xfinity, or Cup race at his track on a night race. That would be awesome at Marlboro Speedway, wouldn't it, bro?
Well, I went up there for the late model, that first late model race that they had under the lights. And that was their first official night race at Martinsville. They're going to have about 2005, 2007, they were supposed to have a night race where they're going to bring in temporary lighting and run an Xfinity Series race. But unfortunately, that had to be rescheduled for the daytime. So that late model race, they ran the late model 300 lap late model event that they run up there every year in October. And I went up there and watched that. I think that place was electrifying. To watch these cars run underneath the lights out there, to watch the sparks fly from underneath the cars. You could see them rubbing fenders and sparks flying from cars. And, you know, I think it made it more electrifying, to be honest with you. And we've seen the fall race where the time difference, where the last 50 or so laps are run at nighttime under those lights. And I just think it just makes it special somehow. I'm glad that Richmond went back to night races, because Richmond had been night racing for nearly 30 years at that point. And, you know, they ran a couple of pair of day races, and I don't think it was as special It's just something about nighttime racing at short tracks that I think a lot of people just remember from going to short tracks, growing up at short tracks, dirt tracks, asphalt tracks, et cetera, on Fridays and Saturday nights. And I think it just makes it a little even more special that we see those, we see these tracks like Martinsville and these lights in. And honestly, I would like to see an event there be totally running in the night. But as Brooke said, you know, there's a lot of moving parts and pieces that have to come together. You know, this isn't the time of year in Virginia that you're going to go and run a 7 o'clock night race on Saturday night because, you know, you're going to be sitting in 30-degree weather. If you're lucky, you may be in the 40s. And, you know, even if you're even luckier than that, you may be in the low 50s. So either way, it's going to be a very cold time to sit out there for 3 hours and watch 500 laps around Martinsville Speedway. You got to push this thing a little bit farther off into the year, somewhere like late April, early May, before it starts getting really, really hot here in Virginia and getting the humidity in here. I think that would be an appropriate time, or, you know, if they can move the October race up to September or something like that. You know, you could run some decent events like that. But, you know, they understand the problems. They understand that, you know, what it takes to move these events. And, you know, I think he said exactly, you know, what a lot of times that sometimes fans and media and everybody involved sometimes forget. There's just so many other moving parts and pieces that they don't necessarily control and are out of their control that would make the swap, you know, the problems with the swap. I mean, we already see with Atlanta, they've been trying to move that race ever since that they gave the Labor Day race back to Darlington Raceway. So, you know, I think that, you know, maybe, you know, as we start approaching this, you know, this new 2020-2021 schedule and things like that, I think there might be opportunities in there, as NASCAR says. They're looking at everything, and maybe they can shake this tree up a little bit and move some races around. And I think that would be the opportunity for both Atlanta and Martinsville to move an event. You know, and then, you know, I think, you know, by moving some events around that they could potentially go to Atlanta, go back to Texas, and then by the time they come back here to Martinsville, it's, you know, nice 70-degree weather here in Virginia at nighttime.
That's right, brother. And, Stephen, let's take a little quick break, and we're going to come back after this break, and we're going to talk about Kyle Busch. Kyle Busch hit win number 200. I don't want to put him in the same boat as Cal Pape. Anyway, we'll talk about all that whenever we come back. But I want to dedicate this song here to Kyle Busch. You can't take nothing away from him. He's a hell of a damn race car driver. Mr. Thomas Rhett here, star of the show for Kyle Busch. We'll be right back after this quick message.
Walking down the street, hand in mind, it don't keep them other guys. And that one eyes are looking at you. But it's alright, and that's okay. Who could blame them anyway? You're so pretty, and you ain't even got a clue.
Most thought the biggest, baddest track in NASCAR couldn't get any better, we broke ground on Transformation, the Talladega Super Speedway infield project to enhance the fan experience. Check it out in 2019, if you're big and bad enough.
We're back live from Talladega, Alabama. I'm Tim Despain, alongside of SpeedweekDigest.com. He's live right outside of the Fishburne Raceway. Steven, Kyle Busch got his 200th win this weekend and at Fontana and Autocross Speedway 400. There's a lot of people that say that it doesn't match up to the King Richard Petty. But, Steven, I want to tell you, there's a lot of haters out there that does not like Kyle Busch, but the young man can drive the shit out of a damn car. There's nothing to take away from him on that. What is your take on Richard Petty's 200 win versus Kyle Busch's 200 win over a three sanctioned body race, as far as the truck is plenty of money?
I don't think, honestly, you can make the comparisons against it. You know, if you look at it in the grand scheme of things, it's two totally separate errors. You know, Petty, I guess you could consider him racing full-time. He raced as many as four, five, six times a week. And comparison's sake to that, Kyle Busch only races part-time. He may only race one or two races a weekend. So it's really hard to compare the two and the competition level at the same time. Back when Petty was running, you may have six or eight or ten on a given week that might be able to go out there and win a race. And even towards the end of Petty's career in the 80s and 90s, you know, that number hadn't really substantially jumped much higher. Today, you probably have as many as 20 or 25 different drivers some weeks, depending on the racetrack, that could go out there and win a race. Sure, we've got the big teams like JGR and Penske and Stuart Haas Racing and stuff like that. But overall, depending on the racetrack that you go to, is, you know, you could have a good solid 20 or more drivers that could win a race. So comparing the arbitrary stats of Kyle Busch against somebody like Richard Petty is really incredibly hard, just based on so many factors. And, you know, I don't think it's fair to Petty to compare him to Kyle Busch or Kyle Busch to Petty because, you know, again, you know, there's so many factors into this that play into how Kyle Busch got his 200 wins. And at the end of the day, you just have to look at it at face value and say that Kyle Busch has won 70-some races in the Xfinity Series and 40-some odd, 47, 48 races, whatever it is, in the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series and, you know, 40 races in the Truck Series. So, you know, he's going to go down in the history books regardless of the fact of being in the Hall of Fame, probably first ballot. I don't think there's any other way of I'm not putting him on first ballot when his time comes. And he's definitely a Hall of Famer. If he quit today, he's a Hall of Famer. I think he's there's not much that he hasn't accomplished. I know he has said if he could get an IndyCar and it was competitive, he might go run the Indy 500 or might do something else, but he's just really focused right now. And I think, you know, he's in his early 30s or so, and, you know, he's got a lot more years left underneath. I mean, so by the time he's done, you know, he'll solidify the number of wins in Xfinity in the Truck Series for sure to probably an unreachable or unsurmountable number by driver, just based on the way that drivers meet the series these days, and there's very little investment by the drivers to build their own equipment and go race their own equipment in the lower series. And you know, he'll probably surpass a couple people still left on that list in the Monster Energy Series, possibly. But again, I think it's just hard to quantify the two together. I don't know how you, I don't know where you start drawing the line at as far as their stats, their overall stats, and how you make a comparison between the two of them. And I'm glad he got to the 200 wins because now we can stop talking about it and focus on something else. But, you know, at the same time, I guess, you know, it's a story that we're going to talk about and we'll probably talk about for quite some time. And as he continues to run races, we'll continue to talk about the 200 number or whatever the magic number is. You know, he continues to tack on in the respective series.
That's right, Stephen. And, you know, Kyle also mentioned win number 201. Could it come at Austin Speedway? And like you said, I don't think there's no comparison to Petty. You know, Richard Petty done it back in the day. That Chuck Myers' most famous answer, yeah, me and boy Fitz talking on the show. But like I said, there's just an aspect about young man Kyle Busch. He can drive the hell out of a race car or race truck or what have you. But again, Stephen, I want to go ahead and play the Media Center Auto Kyle Busch after he won the Auto Club Speedway 400 there at Auto Club Speedway. And it's about 13 minutes and a few seconds, Stephen. But I want everybody to listen to this. This is probably one of the Media Center interviews that everybody would like to see, with the media asking Kyle Busch questions. Stephen, let's take a little break. I know you hadn't had a break yet. I took a break while you were talking to Brooks. But anyway, the number to call is 215-383-3681. You're in the pit stop with Tennis Payne and Stephen West. We'll listen to the Media Center audio there from Auto Club Speedway, Kyle Busch, win number 200.
We are now joined by the winner of today's AAA 400 and the winner of 200 NASCAR National Series races, Kyle Busch, driver of the 18 Interstate Batteries Toyota for Joe Gibbs Racing. If you have a question for Kyle, please raise your hand. We'll give a wireless microphone to you. We'll start with Kathy.
Kathy Brown, pitting outside the box. Congratulations.
I didn't do that today. I sped. Just kidding.
I know. No, you didn't get penalized today for that. They say nothing's as special as your first win, but this 200th win has got to be very special. Going back, how do you compare your first win to this win today?
I don't know. That's so long ago. I remember a little bit about it, obviously, but just the I don't know. I mean, I think the emotion of it on the first one was way greater, just because it was the first one. I mean, my mom was in tears today. She was in tears on the first one. I don't know how many of the in-between 198 she was in tears for, but I'm sure there were a few of those as well, too. It's just been a crazy ride, and to get 200 here today at Auto Club Speedway is pretty cool. I mean, to bookend number one and 200 here at the same place, it's kind of crazy. On the same asphalt, this place hasn't been repaved, so that's been pretty cool as well, too, and just being able to win. That's what it's about.
We'll go next here to Elliot, and then to Lee.
I heard you say, and I didn't get all of it, about a comparison to Richard Petty. The 200 wins is significant, and he had 200, but you brought up like LeBron and Michael Jordan, and how do you compare then to Richard Petty?
So somebody asked me about whether or not I was the greatest of all time, and I was like, I'm never going to self-proclaim that. You know, that's for others to debate, but, you know, I just look at – LeBron James is obviously really, really good in basketball. So is Michael Jordan. And two of them, you know, arguably one of them, which one or the other, could be greatest of all time. But in my opinion, I don't know if in this day and age now anymore, with how many eras we've been through in racing or basketball or football or whatever, if there is truly a greatest of all time. I think there's obviously greats. And I would just like to be attributed or you know, in that mix of the top five, top eight guys. I think by the time I'm all said and done, I could be in the top two or three of those guys of greatest of all time. But I think it's going to be really, really hard to exactly pinpoint how you can define greatest when that time comes.
Next to Lee, and then to Dustin.
Lee Spencer, RacingVoice.com. You know, Earnhardt told Jeff Gordon early in his career, don't worry about what the fans think. You know, as long as they're making some sort of noise, you know that you've, you know, hit on something. But fans also like winners. Have you noticed the...
Do they?
Well, I mean, have you noticed a
pickup?
They
booed the hell out of Earnhardt for a long time, and Jeff Gordon, and Jimmy Johnson.
But do you feel your fan base picking up with your winning percentage?
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like my fan base has been picking up over the years, just of growing up a little bit. You know, obviously, I turned off plenty back in the early days, and you're never going to change those minds, which is fine. But, you know, there's certainly some that are kind of turning the table or turning the corner a little bit as to seeing about more of what's today, who I am today, and the growing up that I've done. But overall, just, you know, I think that winning obviously kind of helps that. You know, I certainly have to give a huge shout out and praise to the Rowdy Nation fans that have been with me since the beginning, that have been with me since the five Kellogg's days, or heck, even my Xfinity days before I was a Cup guy, whatever. So I'm even in Las Vegas when we go out there and I sign autographs at M&M's World, there's people that I see there that come out that I remember seeing at the Bull Ring in Las Vegas, you know, and they're still Kyle fans. So those are the core group that I certainly am very appreciative of and that are very passionate about me.
Go next to Dustin, then to Jeff, and then to Chase.
Dustin Long, NBC Sports. Kyle, I'm curious, from your perspective, this win, 200, do you feel like it's more important to other people than it is to you? Obviously, it's created a lot of discussion, and I think about it in one sense, you know, in what, 6 days, 5 days, you're going to be in a truck at Martinsville, and you're a racer and competitor, and you're going to be focused. So mm-hmm. I'm just trying to get a true sense of what 200 means, and is it? Do you feel like it means more to other people than it does to you right now because you're in the middle of it?
I mean, this was win number 200, but there's so many of the 200 that are special or meaningful, and I don't know how you can categorize or characterize all of them. And, you know, people ask me, well, what's the biggest win of your career? And I'm like, well, I guess Homestead 2015 is probably the biggest, right? So, you know, where does number 200, the 200th win at Auto Club Speedway stand? I don't know. You know, is it in one of the top 10 most memorable? Probably, because it is number 200, but just because of that. You know, it wasn't like it was the Daytona 500 I got it, or the Coke 600 or a Brickyard 400 or anything like that. So it was one of our races that's on our schedule. And it just so happened to be out here in California. But, you know, they've all been cherishable for their particular reasons, and I don't want to discredit any of them. I think that this milestone is obviously a special one to me, to many of those that are around me. My wife, my son will one day be able to recognize that. And Adam Stevens, my guys, I know many of the crews and crew chief people that I've worked with over the course of my career obviously feel something about it as well, too. So it's pretty cool to hear from those guys.
Go next to Jeff and then to Chase.
You were pretty open for years about wanting to get to 200 at some point. So now that that's been checked off, do you have another number in mind, or is anything beyond this just a number?
Yeah, I think anything beyond this is just another number. But, I mean, I could go lightly and say, oh, well, yeah, 250, you know, or I could go reach for the stars and say, well, 300, what's wrong with that? I would be banned from all of them by then, exactly. You know, if I won 100 cup races, they'd probably be like, all right, that's enough, you're done. I don't know, nobody from F1's calling. So, you know, that's about the only thing higher, I guess, that I could try to go do. But, you know, with being close to 100 on Xfinity, that's kind of what I said I'd quit at. The truck stuff, being in the 50s, just I'd love to be able to continue on with that and be able to race those. They're my trucks. I like that. I like working with those guys, my team, my company. And then on the cup side as well, too, you know, somebody asked me, they're like, well, is 100 a number? And I was like, sure, you know, we'll set the next number on the cup side at 100. And it's going to be hard to get there. There's no question about that, you know, but you might as well set your goals high and go out there and strive to achieve.
Next to Chase.
Chase Wilhelm, NASCAR.com. Kyle, going back to the Michael Jordan, LeBron James thing, Jordan, he won 6 championships. LeBron has 3 right now.
Mm-hmm.
But there's other records that LeBron has reached to put him in that GOAT conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But in this sport, it seems like we only associate the GOATs with number of championships. So with you reaching this number today, do you think it's fair to talk about the greatest drivers of all time or some of the greatest and just focus on championships?
Yeah, to me, you know, like I said, in different eras, there's so many different things. Jimmy Johnson, he should be the GOAT, right? He should be the greatest of all time. He won the most championships in the most different ways of having to win a championship and the most different cars that he had to drive to be able to win races. You know, with before 2004, it was always the whole season was the champion, right? Now then we had the 10-race playoff. Now we have 3-3-3 and then 1, you know, and unfortunately for me, I've made it to the Final Four the last 4 years, and I've only won it once, you know. So I feel like LeBron James, where I can make it to the finals, but then once I get there, I can't quite close it out and get it all done, you know. So there's, like I said, there's so many different, you said it too, comparables that not every single one person is going to have every single one of them, right? There's going to be this guy's got this guy's got that guy's got that, this guy's got this. And so I think that's what makes it to where you can't always say that there's a greatest, that there's greats.
Okay, we're going to head up to the Skybox. Any questions in the Skybox press box?
One question.
Go ahead, Skybox.
Hey, this is Chris Knight from CatchFence.com. Kyle, I've heard you mention Formula One a couple times over the past couple weekends, so I was curious if the doors ever opened and the opportunity was for you to walk away from NASCAR and you had an opportunity from a good team, would you take that F1 opportunity?
They're going to have to spend a hell of a lot of money to buy me out of Joe Gibbs Racing, that's for sure. So I don't know if it's going to be worth their investment. There's probably too many things that those guys think about that we'd never be good at being able to drive those cars. I know Jimmy gave it a shot a couple weeks ago. Jeff's given it a shot, and I'd love to be able to give it a shot and kind of see, but I don't foresee the opportunity really blossoming and becoming something that I could take advantage of.
Any questions in the Terrace press box?
Yes, one question from the Terrace.
Go ahead, Terrace.
Actually, two questions. Wolfgang Munzer, Rennsport Press Agency from Germany. Kyle, first of all, congratulations. Your 200 wins came with a Japanese car, Toyota. What's your personal opinion? Will this increase your fan base in Japan? And secondly,
I'm number one in Japan, man. No question. Got that. Check.
And question number two, do you think personally there is maybe now a possibility you get a trip invitation to the headquarters in Japan to get a special award from the Toyota headquarters?
Back when I won my championship, I was invited over there, and just timing didn't work out, and I wasn't able to get over there in order to be able to go and see those guys. There's only one guy that I need to be my fan over there in Japan, and that's Akio. So as long as Akio's a fan, then I'm all set. I'm good. But no, I'm sure we've got plenty of Japanese fans from Japan that are huge about being Toyota followers and Toyota supporters. And, it's cool to be able to have them over here. And for as much influence as they have on the U.S. economy and the things that they do, building cars here in the U.S. with 9 or 12 different plants, over 60,000 employees, American employees that have jobs here, is pretty remarkable. So obviously we wouldn't be in our position today without their support and the men and women of Toyota TRD that do such a great job to get us fast race cars each and every week to the racetrack.
And Stephen, that was Kyle Lewis there in the main center, Montana Catapult. In the Cup Series, Volunteers National Cup Series, he won his 200th race over all three tier series. And you and I, we have talked about how does that compare to Richard Petty. Anyway, Stephen, if you got everything for Martinsville Speedway, the TV times, radio times, I'll let you go ahead and say that out there. I'm going to put you on the spot still real quick. But go ahead and put that out there, and we'll thank everybody that come on, and we'll jump out of here, brother.
All right. Well, Martinsville Speedway this weekend, a little half-mile paperclip out there. Everything going to kick off. You got a bunch of practices here coming up on Friday throughout the day, and kicking it back over to kicking it over to Saturday at 10:40 a.m. NASCAR Gantt Outdoor Truck Series qualifying for that. 2 o'clock, 250 laps, 131.5 miles for the Gantt Outdoor Truck Series 200 out there, to be immediately followed beyond that. Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series qualifying right around 5:10 p.m. So just right after the Gander Outdoor Truck Series event finishes out on that. FS1 has your coverage for trucks and Monster Energy Series that day. Amaran's got the radio Sirius XM also. Sunday STP 500 out there, 2 o'clock race time. 263 laps. 500 laps, 263 miles for them. Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series racing from Martinsville Speedway. Fox got coverage for you. MRN, that's Sirius XM Radio, has your radio coverage for that. It's going to be a fun weekend out there. I like Martinsville Speedway, and hope I can get back to it in the near future.
That's right, brother. And we're going to try to get back up there this fall up there, Martinsville. Brooks tailored a bunch up there at Martinsville Speedway. They put on one hell of a show. A half mile of mayhem. The paver cliff there at Marvel Speedway. Y'all tune in this weekend. It's going to be one hell of a show. I love short track racing. Probably a whole other show we can talk about, like you and I, we have talked about. The NASCAR might be exploring new short track venues or whatever, but that could be a whole other show. But I want to thank Brooks Taylor from Marvel Speedway taking time out to come in to call in the pit stop. And it's like Steve Winston. I want to thank you very much for everything that you do for us. And my next race is going to be Shadow Creek Speedway. I don't know what you said your next race is going to be. But, Steven, let everybody know what you follow it on social media website, brother. You got the floor.
You follow us at Speedway Digest on Twitter, Facebook.com/Speedway Digest and SpeedwayDigest.com.
Awesome, brother. And we're going to say good night. I'm Tim Spain from Talladega, Alabama. He's Stephen Wilson, SpeedwayDigest.com, just right outside of Richmond Raceway. Stephen, thank you very much for everything. Thank you for hosting my website. And we will talk to you next TG live from Talladega, Alabama.
We're a tight-knit family, and it's time for a reunion. Talladega's turning 50, and it's bigger and badder than ever before. Terry with a beer helmet? He'll be there. The Elliot? You know they're coming. How about you?